Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Delighted you could join us for the Big Red Bench. My name is Rory O'Hagan. I'm here with you until 7 p.m. A very busy show coming up between now and 7 o'clock. We'll have reaction from the Senior Hurling Championship quarterfinal doubleheader in Páirc Uí Chaoimh this afternoon, where there were victories for Carrigtwohill and St Finbarr's as they booked their places in the last four. We'll also discuss recreational GAA, which is back in Páirc Uí Chaoimh this week. We'll talk to author Adrian Russell about the Dublin, how Cork made GAA history, his new book on Cork's Dublin in 1990. We'll have reaction as well, more reaction indeed, from Alan Bennett's testimonial yesterday. We'll hear from Pat Dolan and John O'Flynn, and we'll talk to Cage Warriors as they prepare to return to Cork after a lengthy absence. Tickets to give away to Cork's Ian Finn Harps as well. You're listening to the Big Red Bench on Cork's Red FM. Right, we're here until 7 o'clock. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can text us 086 8104106. You can tweet us as well at Big Red Bench is the place for that. Tickets to give away to Cork City and Finn Harps happening this Friday night at Turner's Cross, 7:45 kickoff, with courtesy of Cork's Red FM, proud partners of the Rebel Army. For more information, check out ccfc.ie. So if you want to win a pair of tickets, just text us your name and your address and the words Rebel Army to 086 8104106. Will draw out the winners just before 7 o'clock on the bench. Just going to wrap up on everything that happened today. We'll start at Croke Park, where Dublin have won the All-Ireland Senior Ladies Football Championship. They are now three in a row winners after a low-scoring affair against Galway. Maura Trasny-Kellig was there.
Time, Dublin 2-3, Galway 4 points. A record-breaking crowd of over 56,000 watched a terrible All-Ireland final today, where horrendous weather ensured the scores were very hard to come by, and Dublin got the scores that matter with the goal in the first half from Sinead Goldrick and another in the second from Hannah O'Neill. The Goldrick goal was the first score of the game, and 23 minutes had been played before she rattled the back of the Galway net. Both sides were guilty of wayward shooting, but the fact that Galway's dynamic goal finder Mairead Seoghaire was in the bin didn't help the tribesmen either, while Dublin managed to grind out what they needed. Full time, Dublin 2-3, Galway 4 points.
As Maura Trasny said, their record attendance at the games today, 56,114. In the intermediate final, it finished Tipperary 2-16, Meath 1-14. And the junior decider, full time at Croke Park, finished Louth 3-13, Fermanagh 2-6. Busy day around the county locally in the Senior Hurling Championship. There was a doubleheader in Páirc Uí Chaoimh today. Carrigtwohill defeated Ballyhea 3-17 to 2-16. And Newtown Shannon Glen Rovers now awaiting in the last four for Carrigtwohill. While the Bars defeated Bishopstown 15 points to 14. Bars will play either in Mackillie or Sarsfields in the semi-finals. In the Premier Intermediate Hurling Championship quarter-final, Father O'Neill's defeating Watergrass Hill 121 to 114. In Intermediate Hurling, Sarsfields defeating Argadine Rangers 113 to 110. In the Junior Football Championship, Ballinhassig defeating Garnish 211 to 5 points. Ballymartle had a 110 to 106 win over Irhan. And in the Junior A Hurling Championship, finished Newmarket 4-15 at Tracton 1-13. In the third round of the SE Systems Camogie Championship, Sarsfields defeating Milford 113 to 1-7. St Catharines defeated Clodagh 17 points to 1-8. So two games underway since 5:30. Inniscarra taking on Éire Óg 7 points to 5 there is how that one stands. That game is in Castle Road. And Carbery taking on Ballincollig. Carbery leading 11 points to 3 points. That's the score there from Brinny. In rugby, and Joe Schmidt says that Robbie Henshaw is likely to miss Ireland's World Cup opener against Scotland on Sunday. The 26-year-old Leinster centre has a tightness in his hamstring. Schmidt spoke to the media at the Ireland team hotel in Japan today.
Robbie pulled up with a tightness in his hamstring. He has a scan at 2 p.m. today, and that will give us more information. I think the fact that he pulled up, he wasn't accelerating at the time, we'd be hopeful it's not too bad. Is it likely to rule him out of this week? Yeah, you have to say it is likely, the fact that he did pull up, but we'd be hopeful it's not too bad.
Yeah, so not the best of news for Ireland heading into Sunday's opener against Scotland. Elsewhere today, and in the Premier League, two games taking place. Arsenal are 2-1 up on Watford, 77 minutes on the clock there. Bournemouth with a 3-1 win over Everton earlier on this afternoon. Elsewhere in the ladies football, Cork City going down to Shelburne today in Bishopstown. 4-0 was how it finished in favour of Shells. In the FAI Intermediate Cup today, it finished Wilton United 0, Ringmahon Rangers 5, Avondale United 3, Blarney United 1, and Fermoy 0, St Mary's 7. England's cricketers are pushing for a series levelling win on day 4 of the final Ashes test at the Oval. A short while ago, Australia were 260 for 8 as they target 399 for victory. Elsewhere in golf, and incredible scenes at the Solheim Cup, where Europe have pipped the USA to win 14.5 to 13.5. It looked like it was going the USA's way, and that would have been their third Solheim Cup in a row, but Europe rallied back, and with Suzanne Peterson with the winning putt, the last putt in the last match on the last green, as she drained a 6-foot putt. Absolutely incredible stuff, and absolutely very, very dramatic scenes there. Elsewhere, Sergio Garcia has won the KLM Open in Amsterdam. The Spaniard won on a score of 18 under par. Dubliner Padraig Harrington finished best of the Irish on 9 under, with Paul Dunne further back on 7 under par. Meanwhile, Gavin Moynihan had a final run to forget, 7 over 79, as he ended on level par. We are going to start the show with Gaelic Games and a reaction from the doubleheader today in the Senior Hurling Championship. Carrick Tool defeating Ballyhay 3-17 to 2-16. Going to hear now from their boss Keith Ricken.
Delighted with that, sure. I mean, you know, you live in your community, and you come down, you pass the pitch every night, and you see the lads are hurling for the last number of years, and they have good teams and, you know, not so good teams, and they've worked out for the last couple of years. They've been probably on a downward trajectory, but this year, like, the lads have got their draws in the championship, and you know, they played very well. They put down, you know, they put down their heads. They stuck to their principles for most of that game. We lasted the last few minutes again. Now lasted the game, but that can happen. But like, there's a very young panel here. There's a good minor team that won the East Cork last weekend. The under 20s are still doing well. The juniors had a good run, and so there's a future for the club. The underage is getting very strong. So for us, it's important that we put down a pattern. So that's what we're doing, and the pattern has got us to a semi-final. We're delighted to be there.
Down a point at half time. What were you thinking at that stage?
I thought we were holding within ourselves, really. You know, I thought we were better than what we were portraying. I thought they were up on their hooks and their blocks in Ballyhay were ahead of us in the work rate, I think, and there was no doubt about that. And we had to kind of we addressed that in the first 10 minutes of the second half. You know, we got in about 7-1 in blocks and hooks, and you could see that, and it turned them over, and we opened up inside and to get the score that we knew we could get, that we've been threatening to get all year, really. So I'm not surprised with the victory, but I'm happy with the victory, but you know, I think there's more in them still.
Okay, do you get to sit back now and watch the other three?
I've been sick since last Thursday. I tell you, the worst vomiting bug in God of all times, right? So I tell you, I got out of bed today for the match, and I'm going home again now to go back to bed, and that's when I'm going, so I'll be back to work tomorrow. But I'm sure the lads will work it about watching it, right, you know?
That's Keith Riggin there, martyring for the cause, getting out of bed to help his side to victory today. 3-17 to 2-16 was how it finished. And as we mentioned, it'll be Newtown, Shandermere, Glen Rovers in the last four now for Carrick Tool. They meet next Saturday afternoon. St Finbar's meanwhile with a narrow win over local rivals Bishopstown this afternoon. 15 points to 14 was how it finished. 7 points from Owen Finn, helping the Bars into a semi-final clash with either Imakili or Sarsfield after winning the local derby by a point in the Páirc Éireann today. And the Tork side never trailed. They led 8-7 to half time. Afterwards, Dennis Hurley spoke to their manager, Ronan Curran.
Assessment and just happy to get over.
It wasn't a good performance, we all know that. Like, it was poor. I suppose Bishon did the best to kind of disrupt our game, played a sweeper back there, and we found it hard. Yeah. We found it hard, like, to break him down. You know, Shane O'Neill is a very intelligent player back there, and you know, I cut out a lot of ball for him, and it was hard to break him down, and it was a bit of a fight, like, you know. And to be fair to them, they'd done their homework, and we struggled, but look, we battled, and we battled away, and you know, I think we're just about the better team on the day, you know.
I suppose in the first half he led, and then they drew you back, and he got up by 4 again in the second half. It was the same when they came back level, you were able to come with a response.
I suppose we did. A few big players come up with big plays there, you know. Conor Catlan, Damien came up with a few nice plays there and stuff like that. But we struggled today, there's no doubt about it. It was probably our worst performance probably of the year, but that's as much down to Bishopstown as to us. Not going great, so look, we're still there. As I said a while ago, county semi final jumpers and woolly hats, we haven't been there in a while, you know.
Yeah, and will it be easy to kind of keep it in any hype, you know, but with the semi-final.
Nah, not after that performance. It just wasn't great. Like, so I don't think anyone really expects much of us in the semi, like, you know, which is a great way to go into it. Look, we go in there and we see what happens. We'll throw everything at it. Hopefully a few of our injuries clear up. We look like we have a bad one in Glenn there, which is unfortunate because he's been a great batsman for years hurling in football.
Yeah.
So that's a pity for him. So look, we'll see.
Yeah,
I was just saying there, like, you know, I hope now we get our proper 2 weeks to prepare for this game after the football. I think the competition deserves that.
Yeah.
We go out of our way to look after McKinley or whatever, to so they don't play in the same weekends as their intermediates. I think the Bears, what we've done for, you know, Cork hurling over the years deserves the 2 weeks after the footballers just to prepare for the game. Because, like, it's tough. It's tough going, picking up injuries there in football and stuff like that, and it's not helping us. Like, you know.
Okay.
That's the Bears boss there, Ronan Curran, talking about hurling with a woolly hats and jumpers at this time of the year, and he's delighted to be there after that win over Bishopstown. 15 points to 14 was how it finished this afternoon, and they will now face the winners of Imokilly or Sarsfields, who play next Saturday. Watford have equalised against Arsenal. The Gunners were 2-0 up at Vicarage Road thanks to two goals in the first half from Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, but they got back into the game thanks to Tom Cleverley's strike, and Roberto Pereira has just gotten a penalty to make it 2-2. 83 minutes there on the clock at Vicarage Road, and still lots to play for both sides. Recreational GAA returns to Páirc Uí Chaoimh this week. It's essentially a GAA version of five-a-side for over 30s, and according to the GAA website, it's designed to offer players who may no longer be playing competitively or retired from playing with their clubs are a chance to continue playing GAA in a social setting with like-minded players. Colin Crowley is one of the organisers of it. He's been speaking to Ciarán.
I'd like to be joined online by Cork GAA, Colin Crowley. Colin, welcome to the bench.
Thanks, Ciarán.
Come here, you're not just a GAA, you're also heavily involved in the recreational GAA, which started last year. Very successful as well, it seems. It's been run down the Astro on Páirc Uí Chaoimh. It started in other venues as well, but before we go into all of that, just for people who may not have heard about it, what is it?
Basically, it is the soccer, five-a-side soccer, tag rugby equivalent for GAA. So slightly modified rules for hurling and football. And like during the winter months, to give, I suppose, our target audience would be players, people who are retired from playing or are playing for their second or third team in the club and aren't as committed as they once were, just as a chance to keep playing hurling and football into their middle age, as much as anything else. You know, we'd have a kind of a wide demographic of fellas from 30 to 50 taking part, who either haven't played since primary school or some fellas are still playing junior B with their club. But it's kind of targeted an older audience, older by 30 plus, just to keep playing hurling football in a modified version, on an astroturf the same as you would a five-a-side soccer throughout the winter.
Yeah, last year I wouldn't have been eligible for it, but this year I've fallen into the bracket. Look, as you mentioned there, it's open to a wide variety of people. You don't necessarily have had to play hurling at any high level or anything to play it either.
No, and like most of the fellas, nearly everyone that's played has played hurling at some level. Yeah. But it's like we had a couple last year who did actually play since primary school. We don't have too many former inter-county stars taking part, because I think one of the probably things that the GAA are very good at keeping players involved once they retire, trying to get them back into clubs, coaches, and stuff. Mm. But they're supposed to be opportunity to play hurling and continue to play hurling and football as they get older, is kind of, there's nothing in the GAA to cater for the transition from, I suppose, players who are all in, committed to playing first team in the club, and then once they stop playing, they kind of just go and their exercise levels of activity probably fall off a cliff as regards health-wise. So it's a nice opportunity for those kind of players to keep playing without having to give a massive commitment, without having a manager ringing them, will you be there tomorrow night? Can we count on you Saturday at 11 o'clock? Or Sunday at 11 o'clock? So they can come and go as they see fit, but it's just a chance to get out onto the pitch. And I suppose the bonus of having Páirc Uí Chaoimh Astro available is a big perk for a lot of players to get in there.
Yeah, we talked about it last year, but the idea for the whole thing, where did it come about?
I suppose, you know, it's been something that's been spoken about for years, and you'd hear people talking about it, and there'd be articles in newspapers about GAA, there's a social aspect to GAA to playing, because, like, when you look at the stats of participation in soccer and rugby, the soccer would be higher than GAA, but it's higher because of social and recreational soccer, in the five-a-side soccer. So if you play five-a-side soccer and their sports council are looking for a number of participants, you'll count as a player, even though you're not playing competitively with a club. Just one of these people that go out on a Tuesday, Wednesday night, 9 to 10 o'clock in a local astroturf and play. And I suppose by myself, I'm getting to the age where I'm not able to give a commitment to training 2-3 times a week with a club team. But I do love playing. And I'm still playing a small bit of my junior B team at home in the club, then junior C football, and I love it. But it's only basically going out playing the matches, and you might do the odd training session. So the commitment that's needed wouldn't be, just for playing with the club team, wouldn't be necessary, but it kind of, it breaks out the ground a small bit. So I suppose just from playing five-a-side soccer myself for the last 6-7 years, and talking to other people, that it was just something we said we'd try, and in fairness, it took off last year when we had, I think we'd over 140 different participants throughout the couple of months. Be it, like, we asked at one stage, we finished off with a bit of a blitz on a Saturday evening where we asked players to bring a team themselves. So they brought in a couple of extra players. But we were averaging about 60 players, 60 to 80 players every night in Parky Creeve. And sort of November to December of last year.
Yeah, the rules for it, because I suppose it's not as intense as a league or championship fixture. What kind of rules go along with it?
Basically, we play on a modified pitch, we play on the AstroTurf on smaller size pitch. So I'd say the closest thing you could say to the rules and what they are is goal games under 10.
Okay.
So the pitch is about 60 metres long. When we're in Park Creeve, obviously, and when we're other AstroTurfs, it's smaller. But we try to make it about 65 to 70 metres long, 40 yards wide, and the rules are one hop, one soul on football. Again, same as what we do for the goal games. And in hurling, we just try to limit the solo to say, fellas can solo with the ball and already for four steps. We use a tennis ball for hurling just from the point of view of if you're on goals and there's a fella bearing down on goals, and the last thing you want is a size 5 slitter being hit at you. Because there is loads and loads of goal opportunities in these games because of the small size pitch. And also the tennis ball, if you hit it full whack, it'll only go about 40 metres. So if you hit a slitter from the keeper, you can poke it into full forward line, but it takes a bit more build-up play. Football, similar. We use a size 4 football in the for the matches, same size pitch, and try to keep it to kind of 6 to 8 aside, depending on how many turn up on the night. And I suppose the only other rule we'd kind of implement would be non-contact. Now, as you know, as a referee, there's an awful lot of incidental contact in the games, in hurling and football, and we allow that, but we just kind of cut down on the aggressive tackling of, you know, trying to force turnovers of a man in possession. Now, there's no problem getting a hand in, but it's just cutting out the physical contact, because, as I said, with the age demographic of players, with more likelihood to pick up little knocks and little injuries, we just want to limit that. So, as I said, there's nobody hopefully going home in the morning with a slap in the hand and a big bruise on the wrist or anything like that. So that's kind of one of the more attractive things for a lot of players, is the non-contact. Well, as I said, there will always be incidental contact, but that it's, we kind of pull down on the aggressive tackling. So you kind of, once you get the ball, you kind of have a bit of a chance to play it, as opposed to being dispossessed straight away by maybe a fellow who was playing senior hurling or senior football until 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah. Last year, you mentioned already, it was very successful last year. There was, correct me if I'm wrong, I thought I saw online, there was other clubs trying to get involved in it and organise events like
that. Yeah, so I suppose the main success story would be, like, after Christmas last year, we would have went out to a couple of regions, so we would have had a base in Aroge, in Sarres, in Carrigtwohill, in the Barras, just because we weren't able to get access to Park Creeve due to the county teams being needing us. Probably the big success story was Carrigaline, who they probably started around the same. I think they started maybe, it was after Christmas last year on a Monday night, and they basically kept going. And they went through to June. They basically took a two-month break in July and August, and they started up the first week in September again. And they're getting numbers down there. And in fairness, Brendan O'Driscoll is taking part in it. He's the coach officer in Carrigaline. He takes part in it himself every week. And if he's not there, the equipment is left there, the dressing rooms are left open. The lads pay the €5 to take part, and they just get on with it every single week. competition around Christmas time, when just when there's a lot of people back in Blair that might be living elsewhere.
Yeah.
They held the one off, and I think they had over 40 participants, and like just going beyond Cork, then like speaking to Ollie Moran there last week about they were trying to start one above in Limerick. Monoline are trying to start one in Limerick. There's one in Dublin. There's the lads in Antrim are very proactive in it. There's a Kilkenny group doing it. So it's kind of, I suppose, we just needed to get over a couple of barriers at the start, you know. Like the biggest concern I would have had would have been like insurance and stuff like that.
But yeah.
After picking a crop back, they just went through that same fall as they used to get from others and others. And if they're doing walks in the club and stuff like that, the players, participants sign a waiver form just to say that they're not liable. Because, as you can imagine, trying to get insurance to cover, that would be quite substantial, especially with the insurance issues we're having in the country at the moment. So, that's probably the biggest barrier, and as I said, but clubs though are much more sort of proactive to train it and taking part. And as I said, Carrigaline would be, they'd be the success story of it, I'd say. Like in Ireland, they're probably the most functional as regards the multi participants and the regularity of it and stuff like that. So they're a credit to Brendan and the lads out there for keeping that going.
Yeah, and look, before I leave you go, Colm, obviously there will be people who will hear this and they'll be like, geez, you know, I might give that a crack. Where can they find more information?
Yeah, so we got some information. It's actually up on the Cork GAA website. It went up on the news website during the week. On the news article, they can also check out Twitter, which is Social GAA Cork, and most of the stuff is there. And anyone can contact me as well. My details are on the redrollcoaching.com website if anyone wants to get in touch with me. But there's loads of stuff. Just search Google Social GAA Cork and they'll be sent on. They'll find loads of places to contact and places to have a look at what happened last year. There's plenty of videos of the nights that we went out, plenty of videos and pictures of the participants and stuff like that, so it might give them an idea of what it's about. But as I said, it's just open to everybody. As I said, there was a 21-year-old on to me yesterday asking me could he take part, and I said once he's not too fast, there'll be no problem. So as I said, we're open to anyone who wants to come down and try it. We're going to do next 6 weeks, starting this Thursday night in Parky Creeve from 8 to 9, and hopefully after that we'll be able to get another slot for the remainder of the winter league into Christmas. And we'll try to keep people as active and healthy and I suppose taking part in sport for as long as they can.
Big Red Bench on Cork, Shadow FM. That's Colm Crowley there, Cork Games Development Officer, talking about recreational GAA, which is back in Porky Creeve this Thursday. Looks like a cracking night out and a cracking way to get out and play. So get up and check it out, check all the details there that Colm just mentioned online, and get down to Porky Creeve playing the Astro on Thursday night. Should be cracking a couple of weeks. That's all over at Watford 2 Arsenal 2 is how that game finished this afternoon. Watford coming from 2 goals down at Vicarage Road to salvage a point. We're going to take a quick break, go and talk MMA, but up next we're going to talk to author Adrian Russell about his book on the Cork Double of 1990.
Missed the show? Grab the Big Red Bench podcast at redfm.ie. The Big Red Bench.
Right, latest scores from the Camogie Championship games taking place this evening. It's Enniskerrin 9 points, Aer Óg 6 points, 36 minutes on the clock there in Castle Road. And elsewhere, it's Carberry 1-16, Ballincollig 8 points, 41 minutes gone in that game. And it's just all over as well at Vicarage Road, Watford 2. Arsenal 2 is how it finished. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang with a double in the first half to give Arsenal the lead at the break by 2-0. Tom Cleverley, Borta Pereira with the goals for Watford. That has secured them a point, just their second of the season in 5 games so far. Right, we are going to talk to author Adrian Russell now. He's the editor of the 42.ie and he has just published his first book, The Double, How Cork Made GAA History, all about Cork's double in 1990. Right, we're joined in studio by Adrian Russell, author of The Double, How Cork Made GAA History. Adrian, you're very welcome along to the Big Red Bench first off.
Thanks, lads.
Tell us, first question, why write the book? I mean, like, where did the inspiration for it come, I suppose?
I suppose there's a few reasons. The first is that it's the kind of book I like to read myself, you know, as the kind of concept type book where, you know, someone goes and kind of tells a story of a group of people rather than, and there has been a lot of ghosted autobiographies, yeah, which are excellent in the past few years, but for me to kind of get my teeth into something, I thought I'd like to do something like that. Then you're looking at, the next question is, what are you going to write? And I thought all the ingredients were here for this, you know, an amazing achievement, which hadn't necessarily got the, I felt, recognition it might otherwise deserve. And then the characters, you know, it's all there, like the, you know, the Father O'Brien, Billy Morgan are the two kind of pillars in the two stories. You're trying to thread those together, and then the players are obviously, you know, massive personalities like Larry Tompkins, Tomás Mulcahy, Teddy McCarthy, John Fitzgibbon, you know, and then all the staff, Dr. Conn, John Cronin, people like that. And then I think there's a real sense, I don't know why at the moment, kind of a nostalgia for that period of time. You know, Amy Lawrence has the 89 Arsenal book out at the moment. And I think there's a lot of projects, you know, the Maradona film, for, not to compare myself with with those big projects, but, you know, so that was it. I thought, you know, if I could pull this off, all the ingredients are there to do a good job on this.
Because it seems so obvious to do a book about, like, such an incredible achievement, yet there hasn't really been one.
Yeah, I don't know.
It seems so obvious now that it's out and it's published and I'm holding it in my hands, like.
Yeah, and there's been books for less achievements, and I don't know, is it the Cork thing, you know? I'm not just saying this because I'm on Red FM today, but maybe there's a reluctance, you know, outside the county to, and people make the point in the book to give this the, did you, I suppose, respect that it deserves, and maybe, you know, if the footballers came along and the hurlers didn't pull off a kind of once in a blue moon, or that's not the way to put it, but a from nowhere kind of win, I suppose, which they did, they came from nowhere. Maybe the footballers would have a book, you know, that kind of back to back thing that wasn't repeated until, I suppose, Kerry 10 years ago. So that was an amazing achievement in itself, the footballers. And I, as I got stuck into it, I was like, there is a book in the footballers, because they were such a great group of people. And so, yeah, I don't know why. Like, I know the 25 year thing kind of came and went, and kind of occurred to me that, you know, someone should do this, and, you know, there's that kind of imposter syndrome that maybe someone, you know, a GA writer, I'm the editor of a website basically, but I'm not out there every day covering GA events, like, so maybe somebody else should do it, but ultimately I just decided to go with it and see if people would kind of answer my calls, and here we are.
Yeah, there's over 30 chapters, Adrian, as well. Like, it must have taken serious amount of time to put together, and the amount of people you had to interview.
Yeah, it took 12 months to kind of write the first draft, if you know what I mean, and then another 6 months to kind of turn into English, as my former editor would have said to me. So yeah, there's, I think, up to, I don't know, I won't say 40, but 30 odd interviews anyway. Like, so I don't think anybody can say I didn't do the work, but there was a lot of scope then, I suppose, for people kind of saying, oh, it didn't happen like that, or that's not my memory, which is fair enough, but I tried to lay it all out as people remember it. But, and then as well as that, there was the newspaper research and going back through old interviews and secondary research, I suppose you'd call it. But, you know, I work in Dublin with the 42 and I live in Cork, so I'm up and down on the train, you know, most days. So, you know, it was kind of a joy, really, to kind of get on to Euston, get your head into whatever bit of work you're doing that day, and you look up and you're in, you know, Limerick Junction or whatever. So it kind of passed the time. And it was kind of cool, actually, kind of go up and down on the rail, the same tracks that they kind of went up and down to make history, I suppose. So yeah, there was a lot of work in it, but it was very enjoyable. And the other thing was the, you know, the cups of coffee that I had with, you know, people from Macroom to Bantry to all around the place, and the players were unbelievably generous with their time for someone that they don't necessarily know, like, and they were generous with their memories too, I suppose. You know, they were kind of really open, and they kind of told stories kind of against themselves, and they were very modest, really, you know. And and then they'd kind of say, look, you should talk to this fella next, and they'd, you know, I don't know if they'll want me to say this, but they pass on a number here and there or whatever. So no, it was a lot of work, but it was very enjoyable.
Sure, like, I'm sure they would have enjoyed reminiscing about all those years.
You would hope so, yeah. But then as well as that, there was the opponents and the people like, you know, Cyril Farrell, Babs Keating, who were kind of, you know, once, I suppose, losers, technically speaking, in this particular story. They obviously won plenty in their careers. And, you know, Liam Hayes, the Meath player, you know, all these kind of opponents, I suppose, is the word. And, you know, like Tommy Sugar, the referee in Kerry, who was at the controversy and in the centre of the controversy in 88, he was happy to talk to me. He was really generous with his time as well, in fairness to him. So yeah, even though you're right, like, people were happy to reminisce about the glory days, like, there was a lot of, even for the Cork players, you know, it starts in 87, and there was, you know, dark days 87, 88 for the footballers. The hurlers had, you know, bad days in 89 against Water in particular, so they got stuck into it all, yeah.
Are the players kind of aware of their place in history, or is it kind of just era? It was just 1 year kind of thing? Like?
Yeah, I think they are. I think Like,
I suppose it's kind of unique in a way in that, like, unless you were a dual player, I mean, like, you just won an All-Ireland, whereas Cork people, it's a double, do you know?
Yeah, yeah. I think the hurlers probably in particular kind of made that point that they won an All-Ireland and then it was kind of almost, you know, someone put on another card and it would turn into a different hand, if you know what I mean. Mm. So, but for them, I suppose, for the footballers, it was about beating Meath in 90, really. And that's how they won it, I think, even with 14 men, because they just focused on, you know, like sports psychologists, these they would call it, just process stuff, you know, that they just wanted to beat Meade and then whatever happens afterwards, which was a double, happened. I think they, like Dennis Walsh speaks really well about this, and Michael Slocum as well, you know, for them it's about the kind of the memories of being in a special group, like Dennis Walsh was in both groups, obviously. It's about kind of having those memories and kind of making people happy, really, is what, how they a couple of them express it to me. And whatever way people want to kind of place them in the ranking and the pantheon, and that's up to them. And maybe, if they're honest, they think, and I would agree, that they should be higher up in people's estimations, both panels, really, that achievement. But yeah, I don't think it's kind of the primary concern for them now.
There's lots of great stories in the book, obviously, from behind the scenes and everything. One in particular, Larry Tompkins and Cullum O'Neill. They were worried about Cullum, I suppose, going into the big matches, and Larry had a few choice words with him.
I suppose Larry was captain in 90, and I think he probably had choice words for everybody at the time, even Billy, I think. So it was coming into the 1990 Munster final. Cullum O'Neill wasn't even on the panel. He decided to opt out for various reasons she expressed in the book. And there was a massive, like Larry, I suppose, initially made the point to Billy that we should be kind of going all in training and we need a bit of bite, is how he put it. And then that ended up in, and there was other reasons, but there was an injury crisis essentially, and Cullum O'Neill was called back in. He kind of accepted the call back, and he ended up starting because I suppose Larry vouched for him in Down in Jory's Hotel at the time in on the Western Road. And he's, you know, I suppose Billy hadn't, like Larry says, he didn't particularly trust him on the big days, and I don't know if that's true, but it is true that he wasn't used on the big days up until that point, I suppose, even though he's really talented forward. So then Larry gave him a bit of a pep talk, and, you know, break your two legs was the kind of,
and there's a few other choice words
there's a bit of that I'll break your two legs if you don't perform today type thing, go out and do it. But the point I think Larry was making was that you're an unbelievable player, like, and he says this as well, and you know, this is your chance to show it, like. And Cullum O'Neill went out and scored 11 points. Like, he took all the frees off Larry, and he scored a load from play as well. You know, he was brilliant against, you know, a Kerry team who had ruled the roost for 20 years or whatever. They were on the way down then, as Cullum O'Neill says in the book himself. But that was probably the, you know, that I would make the case, the kind of capstone performance of their few years with Billy. Like, they demolished that Kerry team below, like, and then, you know, they were driving on then again, to another All-Ireland, and Cullum, you know, played a really pivotal role in the next two games as well.
What other kind of stories kind of stick out from your interviews?
The kind of, like, I loved speaking to people about, I think John K. Cronin is a big figure in the book. He was the masseuse. He's a character I kind of remember a little bit myself, around Blackpool and Glen Rovers Club. So he was a masseuse from 1973 on until he sadly passed away, but he was a lot more than that, and the players make this point that he was, he really wasn't there for that. He was like a psychologist, is how they put him. He was, you know, the kind of vibes man, like, kind of a word in the air, especially in two dressing rooms where, you know, Billy Morgan is, you know, at that time anyway, an intense and really motivated man and coach, and then in the other dressing room was the Cannon, or Father Brian as he was at the time, who was, you know, a real hurling fanatic as well, like. So he was the kind of you know, they arm around the shoulder rather than they kick up the backside, I suppose. So hearing stories about him, you know, on the trips to the Canaries and New York, and he was a boxer, a professional boxer in Ireland and the UK in the boots in the 30s. So that kind of stuff. And then as well as that, the footballers, I suppose, had this animosity, to put it one way, with the Meath footballers, which really festered and grew. So hearing about those kind of mad, really mad games, like, we kind of remember them, I suppose, from the late 80s and 90s as, you know, really vicious games. And maybe for probably the same vintage, Rory, like, that Meath team were the kind of, you know, the boogeymen type thing. Like, if you don't do your homework, the midfield will be kind of,
they're coming at you.
So, you know, hearing their side of the story and hearing those stories about kind of, you know, they were in the same resort in Gran Canaria, for example, in 89, I think, maybe. You know, and they were just like at one end of the swimming pool to each other, not talking to each other, up and down in lifts, looking at the ceiling of the lift, not speaking to each other or whatever. So that kind of mad stuff, which kind of evaporated afterwards when, you know, sadly there was a couple of players passed away, like Mick McCarthy and John Kearns, and those funerals, you know, thankfully helped to soothe relations.
1990, of course, such a massive year. Is the reason maybe the Dublin's kind of overlooked a little bit because of the impact of Italian 90? When you're looking back, you think 1990, you think Italian 90.
Yeah,
I don't think the Dublin.
Definitely nationally anyway, absolutely. And for me, I tried to link it with, you know, not link it, I suppose, but kind of tread that story in with it, like, because it was a massive part of people's memories. Like that game I mentioned, the Munster football final down the park in 90, that was the day after the Ireland-Italy quarter final. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people who were, you know, knocking around in those days will remember that weekend. Like Larry Tompkins had to leave his bar down the low road to go up to Jory's to stay the night because his bar was hopping with people kind of enjoying the football. And then, you know, that day was when the homecoming was. And yeah, but you're right, I think nationally, definitely that summer is all about that amazing soccer performance. But for me, the two memories are kind of twinned, I have to say.
There's lots of great stories in the book, lots of great pictures as well, though.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to, the Irish Examiner, I used to work there and they kindly facilitated me going through their archive. Yeah. Jim Collin, the picture editor there, was really great. And then as well as that, Info Photography, who I have a relationship as well, they were happy for me to use some of those pictures. And they are class, you're right, Dan. They're particularly, like, I think there's the iconic type, you know, you go into a bar from, you know, Skibbereen to Watergrass Hill or whatever, and you see the two team photos and everybody knows those and everybody's really fond of those. But then there's the ones, you know, the kind of the Tuesday night of training down the park, or the footballers on the train on the way home with their ties around their heads type thing. That wouldn't necessarily happen these days, with the access has been slightly restricted, which is sad. But
picture the cannon with two jerry cans of water, like.
Yes, yeah, his famous blue goal bag, as the boss taught me. That was his trademark as well. And then there's great ones that didn't necessarily make the cut either, like Dennis Walsh in a Dire Straits t-shirt down the park training, or, you know, it was a lot more. I think people are enjoying this, that it kind of captures, I think, the whole book. You know, it was a lot more fun, probably. You know, there was amazing crack, and they took it seriously, but they enjoyed themselves, and they were great characters as well.
Yeah, you mentioned there some pictures could have made it, but didn't. They were cut back. Was there any stories or anything, or things that you would have liked to have got in that couldn't, or how did you cut them back? Apart from the
effort? Oh yeah, that was painful. Yeah. One picture that didn't make the cut was, I think it was taken by Des Barry, photographer and Examiner, of Joe Cunningham and John Kearns. So the two Bears goalkeepers were the two goalkeepers on the county side, obviously. And the Examiner had the great idea to go out and picture them in their, I suppose, natural habitat around the lock, walking around the lock a few days before the hurling final, I suppose. And then, you know, they kind of ended up making almost identical saves, which were pivotal in their respective games. And you know, sadly, obviously, John Kearns has passed away since, but George Cunningham mentioned that he still has that picture kind of on his sideboard, and it's kind of a special memory. So I would have loved to get that one in, especially as a reference, but it didn't make it. Otherwise, stories, jeez, there's loads, like, kind of...
not for a second book, I'd say.
Yeah, we'll have to go again. Yeah.
So just to kind of, I suppose, wrap up a bit, what's the reaction been like to the book? I mean, like, it's only been out since Wednesday, I believe, but what's the reaction like since?
Yeah, very positive, yeah. It's mad seeing it kind of in the wild now. Just, you know, you kind of go into a dark room for 12 months and then you emerge and people have their saying it, but...
Do you pinch yourself and say, like, I'm a published author now?
No, not quite, no. Oh, yeah, I have to go into Waterstones. I want to have a look maybe to...
Just kind of stand there with the book.
Sorry, what was your question again?
The reaction to it.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, it's been great. I mean, people are, you know, tweeting their little 280 character reviews at me, which I think is going to continue. And, you know, it's been very positive so far. People are, you know, there's a lot of kind of like, you know, this will be great for a Christmas present for so-and-so, that kind of person in your life who would have been up and down and trained to Thurles in a red jersey through the years. It's been really positive. But I suppose more importantly to me, rightly or wrongly, is the kind of the players and the people who are feature in the book, and I don't know what they think of it yet. Like, hopefully they think it's a, you know, it does their story some justice, and it's a fair representation of their amazing achievement, and, you know, it puts a spotlight on what they managed to pull off in 90, which is incredible.
Certainly so, certainly so. And what's the plan for book number 2 now?
What's the next? I suppose 1999 was the next All-Ireland, was it? So we'll just go up the numbers.
Just to wait to do it. Adrian, it's been a pleasure having you in. Congratulations on the book, and thanks again.
Great, thank you. Thanks, guys.
You can pick up Adrian's book, The Double How Cork Made GAA History, from bookshops now. Well worth the read. Really, really cracking read. And best of luck to Adrian now with the book. Tickets to give away to Cork City and Finn Harps on Friday night. All you have to do is text us 086 810 4106 with your name, your address, and the words at Rebel Army. You could be going along to see City and Harps on Friday night with courtesy of Red FM, proud partners of the Rebel Army. And for more information on that game, go to corkcityfc.ie. Full time report from Vicarage Road, Nigel Bidmead.
Watford 2, Arsenal 2, a stirring comeback by Watford, who found themselves 2-0 down after a Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang double with only half an hour played. On 53, Arsenal tried to play out from a goal kick. It went horribly wrong, and Tom Cleverley made them pay. Watford grew in confidence and won a penalty on 79 when David Luiz tripped Roberto Pereira, and the Argentine scored from the spot. Delafeu, Cleverley and Decore had great chances to win it for the home side, but it ended Watford 2, Arsenal 2.
Latest scores in the Senior Camogie Championship games ongoing this evening. It's Inniscarra 13 points, Éire Óg 10 points, and Carberry 1-17, Ballincollig 1-13 into the last 5 minutes or so of both of those games. We're going to talk MMA now. Cage Warriors returning to Cork after a lengthy absence. One of the world's biggest promotions will be in Neptune Stadium on November 9th. Featuring a host of Cork talent and some of the best Irish fighters around. To look ahead to the event, I spoke to our good friend Shane O'Neill, who's the driving force behind Cage Warriors returning to Leaside. Cage Warriors returns to Cork in 8 weeks' time, and Shane O'Neill, our good friend, joins us on the line now. Shane, how are you?
Good, Rody boy. Thanks very much for having me on.
It's been a while since we've had you on.
It is. It is. The last time I was on was after I won the European title, so it was probably November, December last year, I'd say.
Yeah, and what have you been doing since?
I've been kept busy, but I've been still training away myself. I haven't been competing, but I obviously work in the MMA clinic, so I've been training away still, been getting involved in a bit more of the coaching side of stuff, and now as well been getting involved with Cage Warriors with Graham, so I've been kept busy, but just been not been in the competing side of things for a change.
Certainly so. Cage Warriors is coming back to Cork. It's been a long time since Cage Warriors has been in, I suppose, Graham Boylan's home of Cork. Yeah. I think it's been 9 years, is it? 2010.
So it's 8 years since the last show, but 9 years since the first show was in 2009, I think, and then they had the last show in 2010. And obviously, one of those cards had a little known fellow by the name of Conor McGregor on the card. And yeah, just I suppose that alone speaks of the calibre of fighters and the way that fellas can make their way to the top of the game through Cage Warriors, you know, and that's what we're hoping to do now coming back, because obviously Cork has always been a hotbed for fighting talent, and the last few years has been producing a lot of good young fighters with like John Mitchell, Jack McGuire, who are both making their professional debuts on the card in November. Darren O'Gorman, who's my flatmate over here in London, has been making waves in Cage Warriors for the last few years himself, and he's going to be returning to Cork for the first time in 5 years, I think. So another good fella to be on the card. And then there's a few big Irish names, Joe McColgan, Ian Gary, and Reese McKee, all really good fighters from Belfast and Dublin and stuff, and they're going to be bringing a crowd down from up there with them, I presume. So it'll be a good night, no doubt.
Yeah, it certainly will be. Conor McGregor was on that card 9 years ago, and I suppose Cage Warriors has gone from strength to strength in the meantime since then. I mean, like, the promotion has really risen and become the premier kind of promotion in Europe, I suppose.
Yeah, it is. It's the biggest feeder, definitely, of fighters from Europe to the UFC. Like, I think it's approaching 100 now fighters who have gone through Cage Warriors rankings and competed in the UFC, so any young fighters who want to get to that level, obviously, it's a clear path, and to have it coming back to Cork, like I said, it's a big thing for Graham as well. I know that he's passionate about getting Irish talent, but in particular Cork talent, a platform to showcase their skills. So that's what we're hoping to do now, November 9th, to have a massive successful card with loads of Irish fighters, get a big crowd up there, and then I think there's big plans in store if it all goes well.
And Darren O'Gorman fighting in Cork for the first time in quite a while as well, which will be quite the treat for Cork fans.
I know, but he's been buzzing there. He's been going on the gaff like a kid at Christmas since he got announced. So he's looking forward, because obviously, like I said, he's been making waves anyway. He's been doing very well on the in the bantamweight division for a while. He was doing very well, but he made the cut to flyweight for his last fight and had a very, very close decision loss to Adam Adesanya. But like,
yeah,
even Adam Adesanya, another guy who's really high caliber, and I think Darren's going to be buzzing now to get the win back in his hometown, especially after having such a close, like it was honestly, it was a great fight, like, and it could have gone either way. So we were good when it didn't go Darren's way. But no, as I said, I think it's fuel to the fire to put on a show for the Cork fans in a few weeks' time.
Yeah, that was a great fight between Darren and Adam. I watched it here in work, and I thought Darren shared it, but might. I'm probably biased, so that's probably...
Yeah, well, I did as well on the night. I thought Darren was after nicking it, but you can see, look, when afterwards we chatted, and, like, when a fight is that close, you're kind of relying on three people in the crowd's decision or opinions on it, like, so it's just hard, you know. You have to be kind of, I suppose, take those, and at the end of the day, it was still a great performance. You know, as you look at that, I suppose that's what he took away from it. It was a great performance in his first outing at flyweight, and it just showed he looked really well throughout the whole camp from weight cut and stuff, and he felt the same, so it was almost mad, because he even looked better, I thought, than he would when he's cutting the bantamweight, and he was going lower this time, so I think he just showed to himself that he belongs to that flyweight, like.
Overall, Shane, Cage Warriors returning to Cork is going to be a shot in the arm for the MMA scene in Cork, which is maybe lessened a little bit over the last couple of years, but it's been slowly building back up again.
I always think that there was always probably a good base of Cork MMA fighters, but they were probably having to travel to Dublin and Belfast for shows, weren't there? I know Cage Legacy came back to Cork a few years ago, yeah, but I don't think there was a show as big or anywhere near as big as Cage Warriors back there in years, and I think that's what gets fans excited, to have big promotions that are shown on things like UFC Fight Pass and aired around the world, and that'll hopefully develop some of the fighters' fan bases in Cork, because obviously the lads are working very hard in the gyms, and now it's time to get them some support as well. I'm hoping to see a packed house in Neptune on November 9th.
And how excited is Graham about bringing back his promotion to Cork?
Yeah, he's very excited, obviously, because, like, how it kind of came about was myself and Graham do jiu-jitsu once a week together. We have like a north side, a south side kind of thing. And obviously the south side always win, but we'd be doing jiu-jitsu once a week. And I kind of said it to him, I was saying, what's happening, like, will you ever be going back to Cork? And he said if he thought there was a demand, he definitely would. So I went away then, did some Mac research, to use a big word. I just got on to it, because I knew, obviously, I have a lot of friends from Cork. I grew up in the scene, like Kieran O'Brien and Dylan Sheen and Samson, Aaron McGuire, Cork MMA, the lads in Trials. Like, I kind of knew just from being on social media and stuff. And I'd seen in particular the rise of Jack McGuire and John Mitchell, and I saw them doing unbelievable things in the amateur rankings. So I just thought it made sense with Darren as well. Like, Darren hadn't fought in Cork in 5 years. I was like, sure, look, I went back to him with a load of names after doing a bit of research from amateur and pro, and he said, let's do it.
Yeah.
So he was delighted, and he was saying, look, it's obviously for him, going home, it's going to be a big deal. And I think the last time they were in Cork, those two shows they had, like, I didn't even know Graham at the time, and I was very young, but I went to one of them, and it didn't have the same. I think the MMA scene in Cork back then definitely wasn't anywhere near as big as it is now, and it didn't really get the... didn't really get the response that they probably hoped for, like, in terms of the crowd up there.
Yeah.
And, like, as I said, even if it was, people wouldn't have known who Conor McGregor was at the time. You got beat by Joe Duffy, another fellow who went on to fight the UFC as well. But this time around, I'm hoping it'll be different. I know it'll be different, because I know that John Mitchell, Jack McGuire, Darren O'Gorman, for some reason, the three of them are very popular, because I think they're all very known for this. But for some reason, they have a good following, and they get a crowd up, and then the amateur card is going to be stacked full of Cork fighters. And obviously, the Thai boxing scene and boxing, well, the Thai boxing scene for years with Martin Horgan shows have been getting really good spotlight, and has been getting great crowds. I know Martin did a show with the pro boxing in his last outing, so that gave the boxers and the boxing fans something to talk about. But there's been nothing for the MMA fans, and they know there's a massive, massive pool of fans, massive pool of fighters. So Graham's delighted, and I'm delighted to be seeing that going back there now, like, you know.
And we're delighted to have Cage Warriors back in Cork November 9th. Keep your eye out online for details and tickets and all that crack. It's going to be a great night for you. Brilliant. Tributes of our Cork fighters. Shane, thanks.
That's
as
it,
always,
buddy. Oh, thanks for having me on, I appreciate it, Rory, and I'll chat to you again soon.
Yeah, it was great to have Shane O'Neill on, and really looking forward to Cage Warriors returning to Cork. It's been a while, 9 years it has been since that show in 2010, and Conor McGregor on that card losing to Joe Duffy, Joe Duffy winning fairly handily as well, but it just shows you never know who's going to be the next global superstar, and you can see them, I suppose, on your own doorstep right here in Cork on November 9th. I'm going to wrap up the show with some more from Alan Bennett's testimonial yesterday. Didn't have time to play this yesterday. But Pat Dolan, Cork City manager, was one of the managers, was the manager of the Cork City Legends team yesterday. And Pat always good value as well. And Colm caught up with him and caught up with John O'Flynn in the aftermath of yesterday's game of Turner's Cross.
It's just after Alan Bennett's testimonial. And we've got two legends who were here in Alan Bennett's time many years ago. We have John O'Flynn and we have legendary Cork City manager Pat Dolan as well. A great day to pay tribute to a great servant of Cork City, lads.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Alan Bennett, when people want success in football, they always look at good players, but you need great people. And, you know, obviously Alan was a great, great footballer. He played for his country. So to play for the Rebel Army and then to play for Ireland, huge. But he's an outstanding human being, and I'm just a little bit disappointed with the crowd actually today, because, you know, what's happened here? You know, this is Turner's Cross, it's the Rebel Army, it's Cork City, Alan Bennett's testimonial, and the crowd's not packed. It's not good enough, and I'm really disappointed by that.
Did you expect a lot more here, Pat?
Yeah, of course I would. I mean, this is Alan Bennett, for goodness sake. This is the greatest football club on the planet to people in Cork. So, you know, obviously there's problems here at the moment. It's about time the Rebel Army got themselves together and got it fixed. And, you know, please God that they've got a good manager now in Neil Fenn. And I'm sure that next season will be a hell of a lot brighter than this season. But I hope that people learn from the mistakes, because some of the decision making in recent times has just been absolutely barmy army bonkers.
It's been a very disappointing season for Cork City. Did you ever see it going as bad as it has done this season?
No, I didn't. No, I mean, obviously, listen, you know, John Caulfield is, you know, an absolute legend. You know, one of the greatest footballers to play for Cork City, and then the greatest ever manager. And obviously, the way that he was forced to walk out of the football club almost with his tail between his legs was an embarrassment, and I just couldn't understand why it happened, and it's just collapsed since then. And lessons need to be learned, and I really hope now the club comes back together, because it's brilliant that the supporters own the football club, but let's start making the best possible decisions. And but it was nice to be back here today. And did we win, didn't we?
I think we won.
Did you get the winner?
Yeah, I'd say I got the winner. All right. I'll mirror what Pat said about Alan. He's a fantastic person. I'm just glad he got his career together, to be honest, because he used to struggle for a clean sheet early on in his career. I used to have to kind of bail him out by scoring a couple of goals, but he's been a great servant to the club, and, you know, he deserves all the accolades.
I remember seeing, I don't know, was it his debut here in the Cross, but it was one of his first games many years ago, and he scored one of the most spectacular own goals we've ever seen. He's come a long way since then, lads.
That's true, yeah. I actually missed that. I think it was the following season I came back, which was unfortunate for me, because just hearing about it, you know, it sounds special. But no, Alan's been fantastic.
Wasn't the only chance you missed at Turner's Cross, was it?
Oh, you're getting digged in already. All right, assistant.
Do you know what was...
I'll take over, I'm the manager.
Okay. Do you know what was interesting was before the game, obviously, you know, Alan had to be introduced to John O'Flynn. I said, why is that? Because John was convinced that he was so good that he didn't recognise his face because he only saw his back. But
and I changed in a different change room. But no, it was fantastic to be back in Turner's Cross. You know, obviously to get the goal and Georgie to knock the ball in. You know, it's been...
That was really rolling back the years, wasn't it? Yourself and Georgie banging in goals there in front of the shed.
Yeah, it was great. And Georgie's son was here, so we were obviously telling him that this is what we used to do before. Like, you know, so it was fantastic to be out here with Georgie. He was 40 the other day.
It was only... We were chatting about it above. We were kind of wondering what age Georgie was. Yeah. And the lads were kind of saying maybe 38, 39. So they weren't too far off.
Yeah, 40 years old and still able to do it. So yeah, that's fantastic.
George actually was born on the same day as me, and we were both 40. We had a joint birthday party. It was wonderful, like, you know.
But my invite got lost in the post, didn't it?
Yeah. I hope, though, when we talk about that team, you know, it was decades when there was no players from our top professional league playing for our top professional side, the Republic of Ireland senior side. Yeah. But, you know, there's five full internationals from that side. But if you look at Georgie and John O'Flynn, I mean, they were just the kings, and they did so much for this football club. And you know, there was so much talent in Cork. And I know that every place in the world says that, but trust me, you know, I go all over the world with football. I've never seen that special something that you have down here in Cork. And I really hope now that, you know, young Cork people, and you see the, you know, everyone's excited about the Rugby World Cup now, but this is the game that doesn't discriminate. You see the brilliant women's team out there. There's no difference if you're a man or woman, whatever sex, religion, doesn't discriminate. And it was a great occasion to honour a fantastic human being. But for goodness sake, you know, this great city of Cork, surely when we have games like this, the place is packed, because this is a very, very special club. And I really hope that next season, all the rubbish that's happened this season is put to bed, they get behind Neil Fenn and get the Rebel Army back to where they belong.
Back to where they belong, like they were, I suppose, in you guys' times originally, and certainly like the past few years under John Caulfield as well. They were special days when you were here, Pat, as manager, and when you played Flinney with the old shed there behind us in Turner's Cross, and great players, Alan Bennett, obviously, likes yourself, George O'Callaghan, Neil Fenn, so many guys. What a wonderful team that was.
Well, I suppose they were the players. I always remember the season before when I was mounting St. Pat's, and Cork came down, and we beat them. It was a mad game. And there was these two guys that I didn't know, George Callaghan and John O'Flynn. They were, I thought, wow, these are just unbelievable players.
And they certainly were, and they were unbelievable yesterday as well. I was wondering, were they on the training ground this week to practice? Because they looked like they had a telepathic connection still after all this time. And it's great to see Georgie and Flinney there for Alan Bennett's testimony. And all the other players as well. Great day at Turner's Cross yesterday. All right, that's it from us. We are out of time. The winners of the Cork City tickets are Kevin O'Connell and Claire Murphy. So congratulations, guys. You're heading along to City and Finn Harps on Friday. Podcast online shortly. Follow us on Twitter at Big Red Bench. We're back next Saturday at 6. Alan Donovan's up next with Green on Red. Enjoy your Sunday, folks.
The Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.